Chapter 6. The jet-powered desert sled came out of the sun, heading straight for the reflective dome tent. As it banked sharply, turning its canopy towards us, Higgins followed it with binoculars.
"It's Jarrett,"
he said.
"I think we can safely assume that it most definitely isn't Jarrett,"
Breck said as we hid in some rock outcroppings a short distance from the dome.
"Not unless Jarrett has some sort of official law enforcement status here."
"No,"
said Higgins, glancing at Breck and then putting the binoculars back up to his eyes.
"Blaisdell's chief of security. You met him when we went to visit Kavanaugh. If he had a warrant out on you, he'd serve it himself. He wouldn't send Jarrett. And if he came after you, he sure as hell wouldn't come alone."
"I didn't think so,"
Breck said. The sled banked sharply and circled round the dome.
"He's retracted the canopy,"
said Higgins.
"He's..."
A burst of automatic weapons fire sounded above the whine of the jet engines, and the fragmentation rounds plowed into the dome shelter, exploding as they hit.
"Now,"
said Breck, bringing his pistol up.
"As our friend lands so that he can survey the damage."
The sled set down with a diminishing whine of engines beside the wreckage of the shelter. Jared jumped down from the cockpit and came towards what was left of the shelter, holding an assault rifle at the ready. Breck stood up and rapidly fired 3 stunner darts into his back. Jared spun around and fired a burst in our direction. The rounds exploded as they hit the rocks, sending shards and chips of stone flying everywhere. Breck tried to fire once more, and Jared opened up again, forcing him to duck back down. I edged around the outcropping on the other side, leveled my gun, and fired twice. The fragmentation rounds took Jarrett in the chest, spinning him around as they exploded. He fired as he fell, and the frag bullets stitched the body of the sled, struck the fuel cells, and the whole thing exploded into flame.
"Damn you, O'Toole!"
swore Breck.
"I was trying to take him alive!"
I glanced down at the grip indicator of my gun and saw a strip of red showing through the clear plastic. Red magazine. Fragmentation rounds. I thought I'd loaded stunners.
I'm sorry,
I said lamely.
I thought I... Holy Christ!
I stared wide-eyed as the ground around Jarrett's body churned, and what looked like hundreds of fist-sized, hairy, multi-legged creatures erupted to the surface. They looked like a cross between tarantulas and hermit crabs. They swarmed over the body, covering it completely in a black, writhing, hairy blanket. There was an incredible sound, like hundreds of walnuts cracking, and moments later, they had burrowed back down beneath the surface, leaving nothing behind. Not even bones.
"But, my God,"
I said.
"What were those creatures?"
"Sand striders,"
Higgins said.
"They burrow underground at night, and then come up and swarm over the surface toward their prey."
We were standing right there just a little while ago,"
I said, swallowing hard.
"That's right,"
said Higgins, uneasily.
"And we're standing way the hell too close right now. We'd better move it."
"My apologies, O'Toole,"
said Breck as we hurried away.
"You may not have intended it, but you just saved our lives. It's a pity about the sled, though."
"At least Jarrett, or the shape changer, didn't realize it was a trap,"
said Higgins.
"What if he had been in communication with another ambimorph who was tuned in on the game?"
"It might have been interesting,"
said Breck.
"And if they were turning in on us, it would certainly have been worth knowing. However, I think they shy away from that idea. I don't think they're certain yet about how vulnerable they would be if they plugged into the net. For that matter, I don't think we're sure of that ourselves."
"I'm having a hard time keeping all this straight,"
said Higgins.
"But it occurs to me that if people could follow our experience right now by tuning in to either of you guys through the Sci-Fi Network, then wouldn't they have been able to see the bartender transforming herself into a sand cat? That means they'd know she was an ambimorph, wouldn't they? Surely that would clear you."
"It isn't something I would cat a bet on,"
said Breck.
"If anyone on Purgatory was tuned in at precisely the right time, and if they believed that what they were seeing was actually real, as opposed to a psycho-cybernetically achieved special effect, then perhaps it may have cleared me. But I don't think a court of law would be convinced that anything experienced on Psychodrome was representative of reality.
But what about the body?
Higgins said.
Certainly they can't doubt that reality.
It is the body of a human female,
said Breck.
And no autopsy would be able to prove otherwise.
But unless she was an ambimorph, what reason would you possibly have for killing her?
Asked Higgins.
Some of them will think I simply went berserk, Breck said. After all, I am a hybrid who has been trained to kill, and everyone knows that genetically engineered killing machines, such as myself, occasionally slip a cog, especially given the high incidence of Psychodrome players going insane. Of course, there may be others who will think the alien invasion game is real, especially if they witnessed the girl's transformation on Sci-Fi.
He smiled.
It all depends on which brand of reality you subscribe to. In any case, none of it amounts to proof. I imagine it will prove somewhat controversial.
Aren't you even worried?
Higgins asked.
I never worry,
Breck replied with a shrug.
What would it accomplish?
But you could wind up facing a murder charge.
Quite possibly.
And that doesn't bother you?
At the moment, we have other things with which to concern ourselves. Such as the fact that your wife seems to have disappeared.
Higgins spun around, looking all around him. There was no sign of Tyla.
She was here a minute ago,
I said.
You didn't see her leave?
Said Breck. I shook my head.
Neither did I,
he said.
Now that may be a cause for worry.
Higgins turned on Breck.
Now what are you saying? You don't think that. Now wait a minute. You're not seriously suggesting that Tyla could be one of them? Oh, come on. That's ridiculous.
Is it?
Don't be absurd. She must have gone to hunt for food or. For God's sake, Breck, I lived with her. You can't seriously believe that she could be one of those creatures.
I've told you before, Higgins,
Breck said.
I suspect everyone. Even you.
You're crazy.
Tyla!
His voice echoed in the rocks above. There was no answer. He glanced from me to Breck and back again. For the first time, I saw uncertainty in his face. He didn't want to think about it, but he was only human, and Breck had planted a frightening, horrible suspicion in his mind.
You said yourself that you lived apart much of the time,
said Breck.
How do you know that it was really Tyla who came back to you this time?
You think I wouldn't know my own wife?
Higgins looked around anxiously, then called her name again.
Tyla!
The answering call came from high up in the rocks.
There!
He said triumphantly, visibly relieved.
I knew she hadn't run out on us. She must have found us shelter up there, or some food.
He started climbing quickly up the slope. Breck and I followed. What do you think? I said.
I think we should take turns sleeping tonight,
said Breck. Tyla had found a small cave in a large group of rock outcroppings higher up in the foothills. It provided some welcome shelter from the savage heat. As the sun climbed higher in the sky, I was extremely grateful that we had walked all night and not stayed in the desert. We would have been cooked down there. Not to mention the possibility of being eaten alive by creatures like those sand striders. Higgins spread out his bedroll and settled down on the rock floor with Tyla, who curled up beside him. Breck volunteered to take the first watch, since I was exhausted. I spread out my own bedroll, on loan from Higgins, and stretched out my aching legs. Breck took up position near the entrance to the cave.
Breck,
Higgins said quietly, his voice echoing slightly in the confines of the cave.
Yeah?
How do I know that you're not one of them?
Breck smiled.
You're learning, Higgins. They'll make a psycho of you yet.
I closed my eyes and wondered where the whole damn thing would end. What would we find out here in the middle of this godforsaken no man's land? And how would we get back? I felt that we were stumbling in the dark, improvising as we went along. How the hell were we supposed to capture an ambimorph alive? And how are we supposed to deliver it to Coles? We'd had several chances already, and we'd blown every one. I thought about Cammy, a young woman I had known back when she was the leader of a gang of wild scooter bandits in Tokyo. She'd moved up in the world a bit since then. She was now known in the Japanese underworld as the Tiger Lady, operator of the Pyramid Club, the plushest casino on the Ginza Strip. And through her position as a shogun of the Bushido gangs, she controlled over a dozen more. The empire that had once been Hakim Sakara's was now hers. I'd had something to do with that, and she made it clear that I was welcome there to share it with her anytime I chose. I wished I was there right now. There had been a time, not very long ago, when the life that Cammy led seemed frighteningly violent to me. I had told myself I was too old for taking up with a gang of scooter bandits and zooming around high above the streets of Tokyo on a jet-powered skimmer, terrorizing the Zens. That sort of life seemed very tame now compared with what I was involved in. At least Cammy's world was simple and brutally direct. Mine had become about as unpredictable as possible, and far more violent than I could have ever dreamed. I opened my eyes and saw a dark figure in a long, flowing coat that billowed like a cape. He stood at the entrance to the cave, silhouetted against the light. I looked for Breck, but he was nowhere in sight. Higgins and Tyler were both gone. I sat up quickly, reaching for my gun, but my weapons had disappeared as well. The sun made a blinding aura around the shadowing figure, standing motionless at the mouth of the cave, watching me. He took a couple steps forward, seeming to glide across the rock floor of the cave. As he came closer, I could see the long white hair falling to his shoulders, the gaunt face etched with age, the dark and penetrating eyes, the blood ruby amulet of the Player Master on a chain around his neck.
Mondego?
I said. He smiled, standing over me, and though his lips did not move, I heard his familiar, deep, sepulchral tones as he spoke inside my mind.
How are you holding up, O'Toole?
I realized I was asleep. Mondego always had a flair for the dramatic. He liked to contact players in their dreams, making his entrances in clouds of mist, appearing like a specter from beyond. He was another one for tiptoeing through people's minds without their knowing it. He'd done it to me on at least several occasions that I knew of. Now he was here again, appearing in my dreams like an unwelcome guest come to spoil the weekend.
Ugh, what do you want, Mondego?
I said irritably.
I'm tired. Let me sleep.
You are sleeping, my dear boy, and quite soundly, I might add. Judging by your readouts, it would take something on the order of a cannon to wake you up right now.
Fine. Get to the point, Mondego. I was having a perfectly nice dream when you showed up.
Ah, yes. That fascinating young bandit queen of yours. Quite charming in a rather feral way. You seem to have unusual tastes in women.
Mondego?
Yes, yes. Very well. I'll come right to the point. There have been a number of interesting new developments Coles thought you should be aware of. In light of what we've learned through your experience here, Purgatory is going to be placed under quarantine. This is all highly classified, of course, and the quarantine will not be officially declared until after you've left. But the orbital station will be refitted as a military garrison, and everyone on Purgatory will essentially be held incommunicado until such time as we can devise a foolproof method for differentiating between a human and an ambermorph.
Short of implanting everyone with biochips from birth and monitoring them from the moment they can crawl, you mean?
I will assume the question was rhetorical,
Mondego said, ignoring my sarcasm.
As I was saying, the quarantine will be officially put in place after you and Breck have left. But you will not be leaving alone. Coles would like Mr. Higgins to accompany you.
Wait a minute, I said. Why Higgins? And what if he doesn't want to go? He's got a wife here, you know.
Who apparently has more than her share of husbands already,
Mondego said dryly.
One more or less would probably make little difference. Impress Mr. Higgins with the importance of his leaving with you. His ideas on the subject of ambermorphs have aroused a good deal of interest here. We would like to have him on our research staff.
Does he have a choice?
Not really, no. We could arrange for him to be shipped home, but we would prefer his voluntary cooperation. People tend to be more productive when they're working of their own free will.
That's a hell of a radical thought for somebody who works for Coles.
Yes, I suppose it is at that. In any case, it would be best if you were the one to bring the matter up. Higgins seems to have a slight antipathy for Breck. He might take it better coming from you. Do try to convince him.
I'll see what I can do.
Good. I doubt it would be all that difficult. He is a scientist, after all. He'll probably jump at the chance. Meanwhile, you recall the ambermorph you knew as the Crystal Hunter, Nikolai Razin. The one who came back from Draconis IX with you as...
As Stone. Yes, I remember. Christ, Mondego, how the hell could I forget?
Well, we were able to track it for a time until it apparently learned how to control the signals from the biochip it had assimilated from Miss Winters.
Assimilated. He meant that the creature had absorbed her and ingested her biochip as well. For a while, Game Control had received intermittent signals from Stone's biochip, but then the signals had become erratic, fluctuating wildly, suggesting that the creature was learning how to control the biochip, something that was supposed to be impossible. Eventually, they had lost the signals altogether.
We've started receiving signals from that biochip again,
Mondego said. It was startling news. I was convinced that the ambermorph Breck and I referred to as Nikolai Razin, after the Crystal Hunter whose identity it had assumed, was perhaps the most dangerous of them all. It had come very close to penetrating our security, and was the only ambermorph to have ever been inside the Psychodrome headquarters complex.
Then you found the creature,
I said, excited.
Not exactly,
said Mondego.
More like it's found us. The biochip is not responding to an activating signal from Game Control. The creature, which we have codenamed Chameleon, has learned how to activate its biochip at will and transmit selectively directly to our satellite network.
Does that mean you can't trace it?
I said.
No. As long as the signal is identified in time and we can get a fix on it, we are capable of tracing it with some limited success, depending largely on how long Chameleon is transmitting. But what is far more significant and ominous is the fact that Chameleon is now capable of transmitting signals that can completely bypass game control.
I still didn't understand.
What are you telling me? You mean you can trace the signal if you can lock in on it in time, but you can't control it?
Unfortunately, no, we cannot. We are still trying to find ways to block it. Chameleon has been sending us transmissions, which are essentially the equivalent of test patterns, as if it were arrogantly showing us what it has learned to do. Although we've had no direct evidence of it as yet, theoretically, what this means is that it's possible for the creature to use our satellite network to tap into Psych Fidelity broadcasts.
It finally sank in, and I was stunned.
Are you saying it can make direct telepathic contact with anyone tuned into the channel it's tapped into?
Exactly.
Holy shit.
Coles used somewhat stronger terminology himself. You can appreciate how this has caused the situation to escalate alarmingly. If one Ambermorph can learn to do this, no doubt others can. This opens up the possibility for psycho-cybernetic terrorism, with the victims being accessed through the media.
But what about the failsafe systems? The biomonitors built into sci-fi sets? Won't they protect the user?
We don't know. Obviously, we're hoping that they will. But the failsafes are designed so that the biomonitors will register unacceptable levels of stress and block out that part of the transmission or shut the entire system down. For example, if someone who is turned into Mr. Breck performing some feat of daring becomes too stressed, too frightened, and experiences increased respiration and accelerated heartbeat, and so forth, the biomonitors will register that, and the fail-safe systems will react accordingly, so we can protect our audiences from their own physical reactions. Can we prevent Ambermorph terrorists from instilling ideas within their subconscious minds that will fester and break out only after the sci-fi set has been disconnected?
And you know that can be done because you people have been doing it yourselves, haven't you?
I said.
All along, you've been feeding the home audience some subconscious programming along with their entertainment. And I've been part of the program, God help me. Well, now it looks as if game control is about to lose control. I don't know if I should laugh or cry.
I cannot give enough emphasis to the importance of your assignment, O'Toole.
Mondego said intensely.
We must have a live Ambermorph to study. It is absolutely imperative. We have every available undercover team out in the field attempting to capture one. So far, you and Breck have had the most contacts, and you also have the most experience.
I gather the other teams aren't doing too well?
I said. Mondego was silent for a moment.
We have lost touch with 9 of them.
I swallowed hard.
Completely?
Completely. Termination signals have been received. Shortly after that, their biochips began transmitting once again, indicating that they had been assimilated by the Amber Morphs. And then, as happened with Chameleon, we lost them.
God!
You must bring back an Amber Morph, O'Toole, alive, at any cost. Any cost. Is that understood?
Oh, it's understood, all right. But do you mind telling me how?
He became insubstantial and faded away. I opened my eyes with a start and sat up abruptly. I was sweating. I looked around. Higgins and Tyler were still asleep, curled up together in the back of the small cave. Breck sat leaning against the wall at the mouth of the cave. He heard me sit up and glanced towards me.
What is it? Are you all right?
He said.
How long have I slept?
About 4 hours.
I sighed and got out of my bedroll.
I guess that's enough. I might as well take over the watch. Go get some sleep. You're about to have a really rotten dream.
End of chapter.